keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tilehurst End podcast, an extra show today in these quite unusual circumstances. I'm your host, Mark May. Joining me this week to discuss, well, primarily we'll be discussing the Sunderland game coming up on Wednesday night, but we'll also be catching you up on the general news around the club in this little show that we've dropped in before this game after our weekend off. Joining me to do that this week is the Tilehurst End assistant editor, Ollie Allen. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Looking forward to getting back to it on Wednesday night. You know, obviously, unplanned circumstances last weekend, but I think, you know, when you're in the form that Reading are in at the moment, you just want to play games all the time, I think. So, yeah, looking forward to getting back to it on Wednesday.
Yeah, absolutely. We have Sunderland at home. It is on Wednesday night, 8 p.m. kickoff at the Select Car Leasing Stadium. We also have Wigan away on Saturday, 3 p.m. kickoff, which has been confirmed as on. So Reading only missing out the one game, obviously, in the wake of the death of Queen, which, I mean, I probably could spend a few minutes going into tributes and stuff like that. But ultimately, we will just be quick kicking on with the football. It'll be good to have all the stuff before the Sunderland game where fans can pay their respects. So I suppose it's worth us just having a quick word, Ollie, on obviously the fact that the Watford game got postponed. There were, I mean, probably the majority of fans online, at least, weren't particularly happy about it. We've now had a few days to kind of reflect, and also we have ultimately only missed out on one game. I suppose this for me is just something that I just always felt it was inevitable that they'd cancel it. It was disappointing. Obviously, I didn't want to be, you know, without football for a weekend, but in a very extraordinary circumstance, I think it's probably, with hindsight, whether it's the right thing to do or not, I suppose is personal opinion. But we are only missing the one game. We're back on the Wednesday, back on the weekend as well, which I was personally a little bit thought that would be the one that we were more likely to miss out on with the Queen's funeral on Monday. But the FA and Championship deciding that they can go ahead with that. So just the one game we miss out on, and fans not too deprived of football in these parts this week then.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of these, you know, once in a generation circumstances, really. You know, the last time a monarch died was 70 years ago, you know, so not an awful lot has stayed the same since then. So there's not really too much, you know, sort of common protocol you can take from then. You know, I know that football did continue 70 years ago, but yeah, I think sort of the immediate reaction is sort of, you know, they might have jumped the gun too early here, particularly when you look at other sports, you know, particularly the cricket, you know, on Saturday, obviously called off on Friday, but then resumed on Saturday with, you know, a pretty much a perfect tribute to the Queen, really, at the Oval, and lots of other sports doing it very well as well. And, you know, it sort of makes you think that maybe football could have done the same. And, you know, that there's the argument that football can do its own tribute, and, you know, that the best way that fans, you know, mourn, if you like, is to come together. And, you know, we saw at West Ham on Thursday night, you know, obviously too soon for that game to be called off, that, you know, there was a lovely tribute there. And but then, you know, you sort of find out the sort of inner details, I suppose, of why they took that decision to call it off, you know, particularly with regards to policing. You know, football is, you know, obviously the biggest sport in this country, so it requires a much larger police presence than lots of other sports do. And, you know, we're seeing still some games this weekend being called off, you know, at Man United and Chelsea and stuff like that, with games not going ahead, but, you know, because of policing. You know, there's also this argument of, you know, how respectful are football fans. You know, the death of the Queen has, you know, naturally, I suppose, divided public opinion in terms of the way you feel about it. And football fans, sadly, you know, I'm not tying everyone with the same brush, but some football fans, I suppose, have this reputation for breaching the peace to a certain degree. And I suppose the football authorities' worry is that there would be an incident over the weekend that might tarnish that, and that might put, again, football in not the best light. You know, I think the Football Association was scarred, really, by the events at the Euro 2020 final last summer, and you know they don't want a repeat of something happening to sort of tarnish that. So yeah, it was obviously disappointing, and as I say, when Reading are in the form that they're in, you want games all the time. But I suppose, as you say, with a couple of days to sort of reflect on it, and yeah, maybe it was almost inevitable that it was going to happen. And when you have a couple of days to sort of look at it, you do begin to sort of understand the reasons. And you know, but it's obviously good that you know the break is no longer than 1 week. You know, that the game's already been rescheduled. The Watford game, for I think it's the 8th of November. You know, I was surprised they managed to fit it in before the World Cup, but you know, they've managed to find a date for it. You know, it is a congested calendar anyway, but you know, so it's good that they've only had to postpone one game. And yeah, as you said, I was a bit surprised the game next weekend would continue to go ahead. But yeah, pleased that we were able to get going again.
Yeah, the only other things I'd add is that they cancelled grassroots football and kids football on the weekend, which I thought was really unnecessary. And also, I mean, I wasn't exactly... I just feel like after so many years of planning that the government just kind of turn around and be like, well, it's up to you guys. I thought it was a bit of a dereliction of duty, but don't need to get too political with government chat on this show. So let's talk about Reading then. Before we go into Sunderland, actually, there's been a bit of news in the week that supposedly Andy Carroll is on his way back. The Reading Chronicle saying that he's basically on the verge of re-signing. This is an interesting one because Paul Lintz had said for a little while that he was chasing a striker and that we'd be surprised to hear who it is and stuff. And I think the one he was referring to with regard to that was Theo Walcott, the Southampton striker who was a target on deadline day. That move didn't come off ultimately, I think, because Southampton and Walcott and everyone involved weren't able to get it through. It was basically, it'd have to be a free transfer. So he remained at Southampton. So now we're looking back at Andy Carroll, a player who came to Reading last season and I think by all accounts did okay. I would never say that he had an outstanding season or, you know, was back to his best or anything like that. His record was, I mean, if you obviously not counting those two stunning offside goals he scored for Reading, 2 goals in 8 matches, which is pretty bog standard, to be honest, in the Championship. So this, I'm not entirely sure what to make of this. Bodies through the door. Certainly, Reading only really have kind of two fit senior strikers at the moment. Yaku Mate obviously being out injured. It's one that I suppose on Twitter was really greeted as great news, but I'm not really entirely sure that I think it will be changing our season or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it tells you how popular Andy Carroll was during his time at Reading, based off that reaction, you know, despite the fact, as you say, only scored 2 and 8, which is, you know, a fairly average record. And Reading actually only won one of the 8 games that he played in, but he still came out the back of that 2 month spell with a pretty good reputation. I think partly that's down to the fact that he almost defied people's expectations in A, that he managed to stay fit for the entire 2 months. You know, lots of talk, you know, of his patch injury record when he came in, but he was available for every game when he was here. And also the fact that he just worked pretty hard, to be honest. I think, you know, when you have someone like Andy Carroll who, you know, has, I suppose, a bit of a reputation for perhaps being a bit lazy or, for, you know, perhaps, you know, being a bit of a party boy or whatever, that he's not going to give 100%, you know, now that he's dropped down to the Championship. But you couldn't really fault his work ethic and his effort, as you say. You know, if he managed to stay onside against Fulham, he had 2 screamers in his locker. So, yeah, I think a body through the door in attack is appreciated. As you say, the options are limited at the moment. You know, Lucas Shaw, we know, you know, on his day is one of the most lethal strikers in this division, but ultimately does blow hot and cold to an extent. You know, you can't be relying on 35-year-old Shane Long. You know, as hard as he works, he's not going to be that man for you Saturday, Tuesday. So, you know, and there's clearly something there from Paul Lintz that he doesn't quite trust Jamari Clark. I'm not quite sure the reason for that. You know, we've seen Kelvin Ihepashiaman get a few appearances off the bench, but again, he's not really going to be ready to be leading the line in the Championship every week. So, yeah, I think one more body is definitely appreciated. You know, the options out there at the moment in terms of free agents are very, very limited indeed. And to be honest, Andy Carroll is probably the best of the bunch out there. You know, first and foremost, because he knows the club. You know, he's popular with the fans. He's already got that reputation there. He was popular with the squad last season as well. You know, they were all pretty disappointed to see him go to West Brom in January, by all accounts. So, Yeah, I'm certainly not against it. So I was a fan of him when he was here. You know, it's very clear that it's just a case of getting a striker in. The fact that they've gone from, you know, wanting Theo Walcott, who by all accounts wanted to come to Reading, as you said, it was just a case of Southampton not being willing to release him for him to sign him on a free contract. But the fact they've gone from Theo Walcott, who, you know, yes, is 33, but he's still, I think it was something that he was still the quickest player in the Southampton squad during pre-season or something like that. So he's still very much that typical pacey striker running in behind. You know, he's almost a complete opposite to, you know, big 6'5" Andy Carroll target man. So there clearly wasn't in terms of a plan, in terms of we want, you know, this type of striker coming in through the building. We just want a striker, a body through the door. You know, so yeah, I'm looking forward if it does happen to seeing Andy Carroll, that we're not going to be able to rely on him every week. But in terms of another option to have, you know, he was a nuisance for defenders when he was here last time. So, yeah, certainly not against the signing from my point of view.
Yeah, I think there's such a limited pool of players. Obviously, we've seen Massimo Luongo, the midfielder that was on trial with Reading, go to Middlesbrough. I think Mate Vidra is still available as a potential option if Reading wanted to go down that route. Obviously, a player who's also played for the club before. But yeah, I think ultimately, having Abe Chairman as the only striker off the bench, Jamari Clark being the kind of reserve behind him, and Tom Ince actually filling up kind of up front as well, does show that we need someone in. How Andy Carroll would fit alongside Zhao or Long or obviously Mato when he's back, I'm not too sure, but that's just a question for the future, I guess. It's not officially over the line anyway yet, so we'll have to see whether that one comes off. So let's talk about the Sunderland game. 8 o'clock kickoff, as I say, Wednesday night at the Select Car Leasing Stadium. Sunderland, a bit of not a surprise package as such. They've kind of come up, and I suppose, if anything, they've done exactly what people thought they would. They've won 3 of their 8, lost 3, drawn 2. They've just done fine. They were a promoted team that perhaps got overestimated based on the fact that they are a big club, ultimately, certainly for this level. But they've actually lived up to that so far, which I think is fair enough. A couple of wins on the road as well, one against Bristol City, who are just alongside Reading in the table. So Reading's 100% home record very much going to be tested on Wednesday night. But Nolly, we do have a decent record against Sunderland. Lost 2 of our last 8 games in total. Can you tell me the last time that Sunderland won a game at Reading?
I might have seen it on social media. Is it 2004?
It was March 20th, 2004, when we had the likes of Sean Gota, Jamie Ashdown in the team that year. So it's been a while. Reading have won 3, drawn 1 since then against Sunderland at home. Not actually played them since about 2018, I think, when they went down. So what do we think for this one? Is this a bit of a classic Championship game in the sense, whether they're newly promoted or not? Two teams have started the season pretty well by all accounts. It's one of those, it's a little bit of a toss-up, isn't it?
Yeah, I think we're probably quite evenly matched, to be honest. You know, obviously not too close in the table at present, but in terms of the squads and everything, you know, I think, you know, we've obviously had a remarkable start to the season, better than anyone, you know, could have expected. You know, I'll hesitantly say that I struggle to see how we keep that up across the whole campaign, considering the squad is still fairly thin. You know, so we may well end up, you know, pretty near the Sunderland come the end of the season. You know, I think for me, they were probably out of the 3 promoted teams, they were the team that I thought would do the best. You know, I rated Alex Neil as a manager massively. You know, probably quite a slightly strange choice for him to leave to go to Stoke, but you know, Tony Mowbray is more than a decent replacement. You know, I think he overachieved really at Blackburn for 5 years, and you know, obviously knows the North East very well, so seems a pretty good fit for them. You know, I think we'll obviously be boosted massively by the fact that Ross Stewart is out for them. You know, I think he was their top scorer in League One last season, and you know, has handled the step up to the Championship amazingly. Really, he's got 5 goals in the first 7-8 games, or whatever. But he's out injured for about I think about 3 months. So that's a massive boost from our point of view, because it's clear to see that he's the main danger man in their side. You know, aside from him, there's not too many sort of standout names. You know, there's people like Alex Pritchard and Patrick Roberts, you know, sort of two players who seem to have been tipped for great things when they were younger, but haven't really, you know, had the careers that people thought they might do, but still are, you know, talented to an extent. You know, I think Ellis Sims is the man who's going to be coming in up front on loan from Everton in place of Ross Stewart. So there is talent in there, but there's no reason that Reading can't get the result, as you say, at home. Perfect home record. So far, 4 wins from 4 at the Slack Car Racing Stadium. And, you know, confidence does seem to be really, really high in the group. You know, Tom Ince said exactly that after the Stoke win, that the confidence is sky high, really, in the group at the moment. And likewise in the fan base, really. I think everyone's just enjoying where we are on the table at the moment, enjoying the good start and, you know, that confidence, the buzz around the Select Car Racing Stadium and the sort of atmosphere. There's been a noticeable shift, I think, you know, at the start of the season, and, you know, obviously results helped that and the fact that we have won all of our home games so far. But, you know, hopefully that should help us, you know, sort of over the line. And I think we have to be looking at this game as Reading as favourites, being at home with Ross Stewart being out, with the run of form that we're on at the moment. You know, so I see no reason why we can't, you know, go Wednesday night and get 3 points.
Yeah, definitely. This is a game that Reading are favourites for, and justifiably so. What do we do with the team then? Do we go Shane Long and Lucas Shaw up front again? Baba Rahman come in? Maybe go back to a kind of 3-4-3 that we saw in pre-season. You could have Tom Ince and Hoylett wide of Long or Zhao. I suppose out of those options, I'd definitely put Baba Rahman in. Yeah. There's no reason he can't be fit now to start at left wing back. Keep the three. I don't know whether to go 3-5-2 or 3-4-3. Maybe just give Long and Zhao one more game, see if they can make it click in this one. It didn't quite work out in the Stoke game, did it? And Shane Long, as much as we love him, has missed a few chances now since he's come back to Reading. I think we always knew that he was going to be a workman striker rather than a kind of clinical finisher. So that's probably the only change I'd make at the moment, is put Rahman in and then keep Tom Ince as maybe a bit more of a central midfielder.
Yeah, I'd probably agree. I think it's a tricky one, isn't it? I mean, yeah, I'd agree that the Baba Rahman comes in. That makes a lot of sense. And yeah, it is difficult. You know, we spoke about it on the pod after the Stoke game that, you know, the Zhao Long partnership had plenty of promise, really, but it didn't quite click for whatever reason. You know, probably more. I think that it probably still does work in principle, but I think it was just the case that it was probably an off day for Shane Long, really, you know. And but, you know, ultimately when Lucas Zhao is, you know, is having an on day and he's fit and firing and he scores 2 goals, then, you know, maybe you don't necessarily need Shane Long firing on all cylinders. You know, we've obviously got, as you say, the Wigan game at the weekend as well. You know, Shane Long, I highly doubt is going to be able to play both of those games, you know, for 90 minutes. So we probably won't be able to go him and Zhao up top for both games. It doesn't seem as though Andy Carroll is going to be through the door in time for either game. So, yeah, you know, I don't think we should be writing off the Shane Long, Lucas Zhao partnership in principle. As I say, it works on paper in the fact, you know, you've almost got big man, little man up top. It just depends on, you know, and yes, Shane Long didn't have the best game against Stoke, but he was still working hard. He was still pressing. He was still running. It just seemed knackered after 60 minutes. So, and you know, I think that's going to be the reality of 35-year-old Shane Long this season. So, yeah, I wouldn't write that partnership up off after one game. Potentially give it a go again on Wednesday. You know, Mamadou Loom in midfield is still obviously a big loss. You know, so you're left still with Tyrese Fauna and Jeff Hendrick, who I actually thought both had probably their best games in the Reading shirt against Stoke. You know, Jeff Hendrick particularly seems to be gradually sort of growing into his role in the centre of midfield. So, yeah, look, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's the cliche, I suppose. And Reading have got a winning team at the moment, so Paul doesn't need to make too many changes. Or, you know, obviously the problem comes where you've got this Wigan game less than 72 hours later. So there almost certainly are going to have to be changes between Wednesday and Saturday. But I suppose that's a problem for further down the line. But yeah, you wouldn't want to be tweaking that winning team too much at the moment.
I think that's fair enough. So let's round off the show then with some predictions. I've already got a one in from Westy. He's already dropped in a 1-1 draw, which would be, and we're all off the mark now for the prediction league. It was a bit of a slow start. Although at the moment, myself, Handbags and Ben picked up the 2-1 wins over Stoke. So we are all on 4 points leading that. And then it's Adam on 3, yourself, Ollie and Sim on 2, and then Westies on 1. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw in this game. Not because I think particularly that Reading are the weaker team or anything like that. I just feel that occasionally you go into these games to fairly evenly matched teams. They're under a new manager. They've had a bit of time to work on that now. And this is the Championship. It's certain games, particularly this season, you've seen across the Championship, certain games just don't find a winner fundamentally. And I think this could very easily be, perhaps as a bit of a law of averages game. Reading have had a couple of one-goal wins in the, one-goal winning margins in the Championship at home this season. 4 wins in a row at home is a brilliant record. But I mean, as a team of any stature, let alone a team of Reading stature who are overachieving at the moment, is that sustainable? And I just feel at some point there will be something that holds us back. And it certainly won't be a disaster getting a 1-1 draw out of this game. What are you going to say for this one then, Ollie?
Yeah, this team is so Jekyll and Hyde. You know, obviously the 2-4-0 defeats, but you know they both come away from home, and as I say, you know our home form has been exemplary so far this season. So I'm going to go for us to continue the winning streak. I'm going to go for a 1-0 Reading winners. So I think Ross Stewart being absent for Sunderland is a massive, massive boost for us. Honestly, I think that'll be huge. So yeah, I'm going to go for a 1-0 Reading win, I think.
Yeah, I've just got a live update as well from Handbags. He's gone for a 3-1 win for Reading. So we'll certainly have some positive predictions for this weekend, this midweek then. So yeah, 8 o'clock at the Select Car Leasing Stadium. Thank you very much for joining us for this little show. We just popped in on a Tuesday morning. Hopefully a nice little addition, given that obviously we weren't able to do a show on Monday. Kind of toyed with the idea of doing a kind of off-the-wall show, but wasn't really the time for it. So a good opportunity to sit down and get a proper preview of the midweek return to action. Reading and then go to Wigan. After that, we'll be back probably Monday afternoon for a normal show after that game. And then we have an international break. So a couple of breaks for Reading at the moment. But this week is a busy one. Sunderland at home, Wigan away. Let's hope that there are 6 lovely points sending us into an international break that will keep Reading right in the mix at the top of the table. Thanks very much for joining me this morning then, Ollie.
No problem at all.
And thanks, everyone, for listening in. We'll be back after the Wigan game. Let's get down Sunderland then and get some lovely points on the board. Until next time, come on, you ass.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you ass.
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.